Welcome back to the podcast by the Young China Watchers. Young China Watchers is a global community of young professionals. We host talks with China experts in our 10 chapters across Asia, Europe, and the United States, discussing the most pressing issues emerging from China today. My name is Sam Colomby. Today, I'm speaking with Danit Gal. Danit works on the ethics of artificial intelligence.
My name is Danit Gal. I am a researcher and consultant doing work on AI ethics and governance, trying to kind of figure out how technology is shaping societies, how it interacts with us, and how it's going to affect us in the long run. I came to China kind of in a weird way. So I'm originally from Israel. I have my background in cybersecurity. And when I was in the UK, I organized the Peking Oxford Stanford Internet Law and Policy Conference that was funded by Tencent. Tencent introduced me to their technology. It was in 2015. That was around the time they opened up their AI, first AI lab in Seattle. I dropped my PhD offer in Oxford, packed my bags, moved to China to do the Yancheng Academy program. And while I was in China, I just started doing some work with Tencent and some other companies and just started kind of exploring what the field was like. And they told me, you know what, we're really getting into this. We're putting in a lot of money. Like, this is going to be a main point of focus for China. And I looked at them and I was like, okay, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. But then I kind of started seeing what other technology they had, and I realized what would be the implications of integrating the technology that they had with AI or machine learning capabilities. And I was like, okay, this is going to be amazing. This is going to really change the way China does technology.
So you were really at the right place at the right time.
Yeah, I mean, I was very lucky. I was very lucky that Tencent kind of showed this to me, and I was like, okay, this is going to be huge. I need to be there. It was a risk, but I think it was a very worthwhile risk.
Well, I must say that when I think of the integration of AI with their other technologies, the first thing that comes to mind is you know, facial recognition and everything that's happening in that field. So you looked at that and found that more exciting than worrying, I guess?
I mean, I think that as when I came to China, I had very little understanding of what was going on. It was my first time coming to China. I just landed with two suitcases and I was like, yes, I'm in here for like at least a year. And I think that the more I realized what was going on around me, the more, I would say, more skeptical and more optimistic I became. I don't think that you could look in China and just be entirely pessimistic. And I also don't think that you can look in China and just be entirely optimistic. I mean, it's a mixed situation, as most situations are, and I see a lot of room for amazing things that technology can contribute, and I see a lot of room for very scary things that could happen, and I think that applies to every country.
So that begs the question then, how much progress has been made in the development of ethics? So can you tell a little bit about that? How far along are they in the development of an ethics code for AI?
Yes, so they are, let's say, in the beginning phases. We have seen, I think, at least three documents, probably more, coming out. The new generation AI development plan really kind of kickstarted things in 2017, where it specifically spoke about having ethical norms, frameworks, principles, guidelines. They were really keen on making sure that that happened, but the government was not very clear on how. So a lot of different bodies kind of jumped on the opportunity and they're like, we want to help govern AI and we want to help make sure that AI goes well. So you do have a really wide variety of groups trying to kind of figure out what that means, and you have different ministries sponsoring different efforts and kind of, I wouldn't say they clash, but I would say that they compete and collaborate at the same time. But also the principles that are coming out are pretty much washed down in the sense that they align with what has been going on like in the past couple of years, mostly in the Western Hemisphere, but we're starting to see a little bit of a Chinese, I would say, tint to it. And one of my projects, and I'm working on this for the DigiChina Stanford publication, is trying to figure out what would that look like? What would Chinese AI ethics entail?
Yeah, AI ethics with Chinese characteristics. Can you reveal a little bit of your findings?
I think that there is, I would say, kind of a paradox in the sense that they seek to align with the West to kind of reach consensus and create a common ground for discussion. But I think that they're also really trying hard to make sure that the ethical principles really match the Chinese society and they're really benefiting it. So we're starting to see more of an embracing of concepts like harmony. We're starting to see people kind of really contemplating the 12 core socialist principles. It does not necessarily conflict with the broad kind of AI ethics principles that we have outside right now. I think that the focus in the Western Hemisphere is very much individualistic, and the focus in Asia in general is much more collective in nature. So I think that there would be some interesting reinterpretations of existing words and values to kind of match the local context. And I'm going to use privacy as a mini case study to kind of show how the same word that is shared across different kind of AI ethics documents could mean very different things in a local context.
Well, then let's look at sort of the different perspectives on AI in Asia, in China in particular. You wrote a great paper on comparing Korea, Japan, and China and how they perceive AI. And you sort of ranged them on a tool partner spectrum. Can you tell us, let's start with, what is that? What is that tool partner spectrum?
So explaining the kind of tool partner spectrum. So on the tool side, you basically have technology that is being treated very functionally. Basically, the thing that helps you navigate on Google Maps, the technology that you use that makes decisions, applications like facial recognition, natural language processing, things that are very tool-like and functional that help you achieve growth and develop. And on the partner side, you really have technology that has a much more interpersonal interface. Care robots, friend chatbots, like the ones operated by Microsoft, like Xiao Ice and Rina in Japan. You have the virtual wife in Japan as well. You have a technology that is just given a human character and interacts with you on a more social and interpersonal level. China is a really interesting case study because it hovers in the middle of the spectrum. So what it has is it has this inherent tension between a very kind of top-down, tool-driven approach, like AI is essential for development, it's the future, we need to invest everything in it, and it has this really interesting bottom-up approach of AI is more than that. If you kind of look at Buddhist traditions or the techno-animistic Buddhist traditions, you see that there are monasteries embracing AI, embracing technology and really using it to kind of spread the religion and help believers and users engage deeper with it. So I think that in and of itself is astounding. But what you also see is you also see a lot of users and developers looking at the technology and saying, we need to learn how to live with it and we need to coexist with it. And if you look at the harmonious AI principles from Yi Zheng from the China Academy of Science, you really see kind of what the vision he has for the next level of engagement, living in harmony with AI and getting to the point where humans and AI could develop peacefully together, which I think a lot of people disagree with. He basically says that if we don't develop a harmonious relationship with AI, then we can't coexist with it.
In your paper, you mentioned that governments usually promote a tool-based approach for AI, right? Looking at it as a tool. Whereas in popular culture, the partnership approach is much more popular. You mentioned a whole bunch of TV series that are exploring this kind of partnership idea. Why is it that government is trying to steer away from what public perception would like AI to be? Is there a fear there?
I think what we're seeing is we're seeing governments that had a very clear tool perspective from the start and governments that are kind of moving in that direction. So Japan is definitely moving in that direction, more so to achieve consensus with the West than anything else. It has not been the government vision. But I think that the South Korean policy actually explains this best. So the South Koreans have a term called antisocial development. And that is one thing that they are, I would say, borderline allergic to. They are very much concerned about that. So antisocial development is basically developing technology in a way that would negatively impact society. They're very much afraid of developing technology that would distract and detract from human interactions. So for example, friend chatbots that I mentioned, a virtual wife for sure, all the stories of basically partnership or meaningful companionship between human and machine, I would say would fall under this antisocial development. And at the end of the day, societies exist because there is a social order. People get married, they have children, they have norms and rules that kind of keep them together. And the minute you throw technology into that mix, a lot of things get shuffled. And people are very scared of that. And I think that we've seen this more acutely in the West, where people are really just, you know, they see robots, they deface and vandalize, then kick them into a pool. Whereas I think you have much more respect and open-mindedness in Asia. And I think that that scares governments in terms of making sure that they can actually maintain a cohesive society.
So in very basic terms, they're afraid that we wouldn't make babies anymore because we'd all have a digital assistant.
Yeah, I mean, that I think that is the kind of base layer, but I think that also just interacting with technology. So the Ministry of Science and Technology in Korea basically told me, they were like, we do not want obedient robots, because if you have a robot that just constantly aims to please you, and is just always obedient, always just pleasant, you could say whatever you want to it and it will always try to, you know, get on your best side. How is that going to affect the way that we interact with humans? How can you go about in society without being a bad person who just basically only cares about their own needs? And I think specifically in Asia, that's a much more profound quality, where you basically have this society or like the public good over your personal good. And I think that technology is really tailored to satisfy or to fulfill your personal needs. And I think that people in the government are afraid of having this kind of very individualistic use pattern affect the way that citizens behave in that country that is very much society oriented.
But then on the other hand, this partnership side of AI could also help the government with a lot of problems, right? I mean, I don't know how many it is now, but there's so many more men than women in China. So there's loneliness in that aspect. And then there's the elderly. I mean, there's an aging population that is dealing with loneliness. So can AI not be applied in a good way to solve issues that the government is trying to solve anyway?
I mean, they are already applied. So China has, I would say that one of the earliest policies to actually actively call for the use and application of AI is the policy for taking care of the elderly. I definitely see a case for the benefit of using technology to help treat them and to keep them company. But there has been a pilot of an elderly care home that was built around the domestication of robots. And I researched that specific elderly care home for my thesis in Yancheng. And what you discover is that the technology is actually not that good, and the patience of the elderly is not that high. So what happens is that they clash a lot, and they try to use the technology, but the technology is not very good. And what happened is that you kind of throw the technology at them, hoping that they could engage with it in meaningful ways. And I think that it results with more loneliness, because their only interface for interacting with their families and their children is through a tablet on the robot itself. AI is not at the point where it could actually provide meaningful companionship, specifically to non-digital natives. And on the side of the single man villages, basically what you're saying is that you are bringing in technology to solve a societal issue, a very severe societal problem that has led to this imbalance, gender imbalance in the Chinese society. But at the end of the day, these people cannot procreate with robots. And it's also not guaranteed that these robots will give them the kind of companionship that they seek. We do not have studies of how people who have romantically associated with technology, how they actually interact in society and what are the implications of that. You could discover that this is wonderful and it solves the problem, or you could actually discover that this brings about a whole new host of problems. There is much more that we need to know before we can actually say this is good, this is bad. And I don't see a lot of people incentivized to really research that.
Another aspect of creating feminine partners for these villages of men is the issue that you also research, which is the fact that their attitude towards women might change, right? And it might further misogynistic patterns. Do you see that in China? One example that I know of is Jia Jia, which is a couple of years ago now. Are there any more examples of this male-oriented development of robots?
Yeah, I mean, so the reason I came into talking about the feminization of technology is just because as I explored the social and companionship use of technology in specifically in East Asia, I really came across repeated instances of feminized or feminine technology that was catered to a very specific subset of the population. And that was the point where I was like, okay, wait a minute, what is going on? We need to talk about this. So I think that good examples include Xiao Ice. It's the most successful chatbot in the world. It has accumulated 600 million users. They confess their love to it. They call it their virtual girlfriend. It has become quite the thing, and Microsoft really prouds itself of it. But Xiao Ice is modeled after an underaged schoolgirl. She wears, like, her digital avatar wears a school uniform. This is really problematic when you have people of all ages interacting with it, and she is modeled in their minds as an underage girl. I mean, that has feminization issues, misogyny, but it also is kind of pedophilic in nature. And that's really, really troubling. Jia Jia was a good example because she was basically promoted as the most beautiful woman in the world. She's not a woman. She's a robot. She's just a lot of metal parts and basically encased a chatbot. But the first words that came out of her mouth was, "Yes, my lord." These are the kind of behavior patterns that we're seeing that are basically really negatively affect women by meaning to either replace them, to set unrealistic standards, to determine that if we cannot make human women obedient, then we shall make a robot copy of them that will be obedient. Honestly, the way that China has been developing companionship technology really worries me. One of the earliest AI ethics councils to form in China is led by the professor who led the creation of Jia Jia. And he specifically was the person who kind of defined her as the most beautiful woman. He oversaw her development. And I think that the fact that we have an ethics council in China that is led by a person who has intentionally feminized technology is problematic. It should also be said that, on the other hand, you do have other technologies that have not taken the same path. Alibaba has a voice assistant that is shaped or modeled after a cat. And I mean, I think that's wonderful because it has a gender-neutral voice. It has this kind of cartoonish voice. It looks like a cat. It acts like a cat. It does not seek to emulate a human, and specifically not a female.
So what is the solution then? Is it pushing more women to go into engineering so that that bias might go away? And do you see any efforts in that direction? Or are there any other solutions on offer?
I mean, pushing women into engineering, not pushing, just encouraging them, is something that we should be doing anyways, and we are doing. I advise to ladies who tech. I have tried to kind of get involved in a lot of initiatives that specifically care about that and just encourage and support women to go into these fields. I don't think that's enough because what we're going to have is, okay, so we're going to have like a robot maid and a robot butler. I don't think that that solves the problem. I think it only makes it worse. So what I would say is I would encourage people, in addition to promoting or encouraging women to go into STEM, is to stop humanizing or anthropomorphizing technology. Because at the end of the day, you could have a voice assistant that is genderless or is a cat or is some other form of being that is not humanized. I mean, you could still use it. It's still functional. It's still nice. You could still interact with it in the way that you want. I would just encourage people to stop anthropomorphizing technology.
So you're saying that encouraging women to go into STEM wouldn't really solve the problem. We should just move away from anthropomorphizing altogether. But, you know, intuitively, I have a Google Home. I like the fact that I'm talking to somebody or like something that looks or sounds like a real person. I don't know if a gender neutral voice, for instance, would make me more comfortable to talk to my device.
There's definitely something to be said for having a technology that you can familiarize yourself with, that you can relate to. That is the reason behind the kind of humanization of technologies, to make it more usable and appealing for people. So they just inherently go for humanized technology. To the extent that we will be able to move aside from that, maybe as more negative consequences materialize, we will be kind of forced to make that move. But for now, companies are not going to give up the revenues. They're not going to give up on their quest to make this technology more appealing and useful to you, because the more you use it, the more data they get, and the more powerful it becomes, and the more popular it becomes. So they have a clear incentive in making this as humanized as possible. I'm not very optimistic about this.
So it's a government responsibility then. It's a decision that's up to leadership.
I mean, I think that at the end of the day it is. And if you kind of look at the seeds of antisocial development concerns in South Korea, I think that would make for a wonderful and a very, very important precedent in terms of the kind of the government coming and saying, listen, guys, we know you want to make your profit. Like, we're super happy for you. But if you're going to basically infringe on the bedrock of society, then we need to have a proper conversation about this. We're going to start seeing more governments do that, specifically as the development becomes more social in nature and we're starting to kind of really study the implications of what that would entail. But I also think that we're going to start seeing that when governments continue pushing in the tool direction and societies specifically, I would say, or at least in East Asia, start kind of pulling in the partner direction. And I think that conflict, to kind of go back to our previous conversation, that conflict is going to manifest in China, I would say, perhaps more strongly than other countries.
Okay, so let's go over reading recommendations then. We'll be linking your paper on the tool partner spectrum in the description, and then obviously you have your work on feminized digital assistants coming up, so looking forward to that. But what other recommendations do you have for us?
I mean, the chapters are maybe a good way to kind of get a shallow overview of things, but I would encourage people to look more into techno-animistic cultures. There's a Quartz video. Quartz in general does amazing videos, but they put up the first case study of the robots being used for elderly care. So I would definitely recommend that. I think that there are not that many resources looking into this. It's really quite fragmented. So I would like to completely ignore your question and make another recommendation, which is just to get people out there and engaging with the technology so that they can get hands-on experience. I think that we have an inclination to look at the very functional development of AI, or like, is China going to be the next superpower? Will China have AI superiority? And I think that it's very easy to overlook what AI is actually used for. We tend to focus, and perhaps rightly so, on surveillance and on things that really infringe on human dignity. But I think that there is a much deeper story to this in the way that people interact with technology, how it shapes their society, how it affects their daily lives. And I would encourage more people who are interested in that to actually try and understand what technology does for society, especially such a huge and complex society like China. Because at the end of the day, Chinese AI is prominent. There's no denying that it's going to be a major force in the world. And if you have a technology that is designed for a certain society and is used in certain ways, then that's going to start kind of overspilling into other countries. So I would encourage more people to A, get in touch with me if they're interested, and B, just kind of really go into a deeper exploration of what AI would mean for the future of societies. I hope that's okay.
That's definitely okay. Well, thanks so much.
Awesome.
That was Danit Gal, a consultant and researcher working on technology ethics and governance. I highly recommend reading her papers and following her research. It's super fascinating. For more information on our organization, go to youngchinawatchers.com. or come meet up with us at a chapter near you. My name is Sam Colomby. The music in this episode is by Blue Dot Sessions.